This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
In many ways, economics comes down to numbers. How many of this? What kind of increase in that? Nice, solid information you can wrap your brain around. Until you can't. Economic forecasting in interesting times on the program today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Palm Wonderful, 100% pomegranate juice in the curvy bottle, the antioxidant superpower. Information at pomwonderful.com. And by Constant Contact, helping more than 250,000 small businesses and nonprofits succeed using email marketing. ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, a smart way to reach your customers.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today is the 25th of March. Great to have you with us. And the economic flavor of this Wednesday was set early on with a pair of reports that got Wall Street all excited and launched another round of speculation that some kind of corner has been turned. Orders for durable goods rose last month. That's expensive stuff like refrigerators and computers. New home sales were up, too, month over month. The obligatory caveat here is that one step forward, 10 steps back does not an economic recovery make. And increasingly, economists whose job it is to make sense of the data we're getting have been reduced to guessing. Edward Lehmer is the director of the UCLA Anderson Economic Forecast. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
There is some conflicting data out there. There's what look like good numbers today. The stock market has been reacting mostly positively the last week or two. What do you make of it?
I think what you're talking about, there's a few little rays of sunshine in an otherwise dark set of data. The sunshine comes from building permits are up a little bit, housing starts a little bit, retail sales look like they've bottomed out, and today, as you said, factory orders are up, and most importantly, the equities markets are starting to see a little optimism going forward. At the same time, the economy is extremely troubled. The labor market is sloughing out jobs at a very rapid rate. We expect that to continue at least through the next quarter. The second half of this year still looks better.
The nub of it, though, is that you really don't have a lot to base your current forecasting on, do you?
No, that's accurate, meaning that accurate forecasting comes from comparing the data that are today, available today, with historical points in the past, and there's hardly any legitimate comparisons, and the result is that nobody is doing forecasting. We're all doing hunches at this point.
What is the average consumer supposed to make of this, then?
Well, we frighten consumers to the point where they imagine that there's a good prospect of a Great Depression. That certainly is not in the prospect. No reputable forecaster is producing anything like a Great Depression. So it's still okay if you spend a little bit. You do not have to put all your money into a mattress.
Is it possible that one of the things economists can't really figure out is what consumers are going to do with all this conflicting information?
Well, that's a critical point, which is we unleashed this tsunami of fear in September, October, and November, fear from the standpoint of equity investors, but more importantly, consumers. And truthfully, it's very hard to predict a fear cycle. That fear can grip us very rapidly, but it can lose its grip just as rapidly.
How might we know that it's losing its grip?
Well, you got to see consumers making the only forecast that matters, which is out there buying homes and cars again. Because when they're buying homes and cars, they're feeling good about the future.
Since I have you on the line, let me try to put you on the spot, even though you've just said mostly economists are playing hunches these days. What is your hunch about the way things are going to go?
Well, our hunch is we're going to have a very negative quarter GDP-wise this quarter. We'll have another distressingly large negative in the second quarter, but then the second half of next year, the economy will be in a healing cycle. You won't get significant growth, but you won't get the levels of negatives that we've had this first half.
Second half of next year, you said?
No, 2000. I meant this year, 2009.
Edward Lehmer, the director of the UCLA Anderson Forecast. Mr. Lehmer, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
The uproar over AIG bonuses seems to be subsiding, but it probably is not going to be long before there's another round of discussion about executive compensation. So Macy's is trying something different. Yesterday, the department store chain filed a new compensation plan with the SEC. In the past, part of a pay package would be Macy's stock or stock options that would pay off when share prices rose. Pretty standard stuff there. Here, though, is the Macy's twist. Executives will get stock, but only if the company does well against its competition. Amanda Aronchek reports now from New York.
Picture a marathon. On the starting line, Macy's, Target, The Gap, Nordstrom's, and six other retailers. And they're off. This is a long race. It ends in 3 years. In 2011, if Macy's comes in the top five, its executives get 75% of their stock options. If they're in the top third, they get the whole package.
In compensation consulting worlds, this is an exciting new development.
Tom LeWare is a partner at Compensia, a compensation consulting firm. He says in a rising market, everyone likes stock options. Shareholders like it because the executives are motivated. And the executives like it because they can profit from gains. In a down market, he says, that mutual affection for options doesn't last.
There's a natural inclination on the part of executives to ask for new stock options at a low price, and a natural inclination on the part of the stockholders to say, no, you need to suffer the way we're suffering. So that's breaking down.
LeWare says that this is an unusual idea, but he says other companies are considering similar plans. Bert Flickinger is a consumer industry analyst for SRG Insights. He says the new program could motivate Macy's officials and give the company some much-needed momentum.
The department store sector has been slowly dying for years, and many of the major chains may be dead within a couple quarters, and Macy's is doing a heroic job to hold on.
Flickinger says that the announcement hasn't affected Macy's stock yet. He says the entire retail industry is so beaten down by the recession, it could take every one of those 3 years for the company to see positive results. In New York, I'm Amanda Aronchik for Marketplace.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is in Mexico today, where she said an insatiable appetite for drugs here has been fueling a lot of the recent drug violence along the border. Back in Washington, meanwhile, a Senate committee took up another breach in the border today, one that lets billions of dollars in drug money enter the U.S. every year. From the America's Desk at WLRN, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
They're called stored value cards. They look like your run-of-the-mill gift card, a piece of plastic with a magnetic strip. But they're being used by drug runners and money launderers as an almost invisible way to smuggle cash. Charles Intriago is a former federal prosecutor and founder of Money Laundering Alert.
They're so small. I mean, just think. You could be holding what looks like a credit card in your hand, and it could be holding $1 million. And you sneak them into some suitcase.
Drug cartels at the Mexican border use the cards to smuggle an estimated $8 billion to $24 billion a year. Though stored value cards can sometimes be used to draw money out of ATMs, the cards are not considered legally a monetary instrument or cash.
Nobody has the authority to ask you to take your wallet out and report how much money may be implanted in a stored value card. So it's easy to move dirty money.
The Senate committee wants to close that loophole. One proposal is to amend the Bank Secrecy Act to declare stored value cards a monetary instrument. But the $300 billion a year prepaid card industry would resist that change. Terry Maher is general counsel for the network-branded Prepaid Card Association. He says existing bank regulations have enough teeth to police stored value cards.
We don't want to see these products misused for money laundering or terrorist financing, so we want to work with the regulators and law enforcement to minimize the chances of that happening.
Other ways to limit smuggling would be to prohibit stored value cards from being used at ATMs or after you cross the border into Mexico. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Wall Street started strong today, got a little tired, and then rallied at the bell. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The president said it last night. The Treasury Secretary said it today, and he's going to say it again tomorrow in yet more congressional testimony, that the Obama administration wants new ways to protect against systemic risk in the financial industry, new regulations and government powers. Commentator Robert Reich thinks that's a great idea. He's just worried about execution.
The only way to restore trust in Wall Street is to make the street more transparent. So much was done off the balance sheets, buried in incomprehensibly complex derivatives, swaps, debt instruments that were collateralized, securitized, guaranteed, insured, co-partied, AAA-rated nothings, sliced and diced until no one could possibly know. Regulators did not have a clue. Big institutional investors, no idea. Even the top brass at the big banks and AIG didn't know. But what did they care when the money was rolling in? Transparency is about accountability to investors and to the public. And the problem right now is so much of the financial sector appears to be accountable to neither. The Treasury has thrown a tarp over much of the Wall Street bailout. Even worse, the Federal Reserve Board has so far swapped over $1 trillion of T-bills for dubious collateral and murky debt instruments. Forget transparency. Several members of the House and Senate banking committees tell me they don't know what the Fed is doing. The Fed is launching an additional $1 trillion off the federal budget program to lure investors into making consumer loans. Now, maybe this is a good idea, but who knows? There's no appropriation, no congressional oversight. And get this, among the investors to be lured into this program are hedge funds. You can't get less transparent than a hedge fund. I mean, they could collapse tomorrow. The Treasury and Fed are trying to do their jobs under the most difficult circumstances in over half a century. But they're losing sight of a very basic principle. You can only make a financial system more transparent and accountable by using techniques that are themselves transparent and accountable.
Robert Reich is a professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Do take a second to send us your thoughts. Write to us through our website. It's marketplace.org. More than 500,000 jobs are disappearing from this economy every month. People who still do have some place to go in the mornings are worried that soon they might not. So some of them are dusting off old business plans and launching their own startups as they try to get ready for life after the pink slip. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports now from the entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting.
Call them preemptive entrepreneurs, the young bankers thinking about a metal extrusion business, the cousins in a struggling family firm who've launched a construction company on the side, the woman plowing her severance package into a green cleaning service, and Lenorma Huggins Hopes, who's not feeling secure about much of anything in her job at Northrop Grumman right now, besides her next few paychecks.
They're doing a lot of reorganizing and a lot of downsizing, so you're kind of like on pins and needles as to will your job still be there?
Huggins Hopes is 43. She's managed federal contracts at Northrop in Virginia since 2006. Last year, she decided to take the entrepreneurial plunge.
I want to be the determine my own fate when it comes to my finances, so I decided to create my own online jewelry business.
She's designing original necklaces, bracelets, and the like, selling online and in local boutiques. She says it's more or less a second full-time job that she's fitting in after hours. 700 miles away in West Lafayette, Indiana, Tom Davis also has a full-time job on the side. It's a small business he started nice and slow, one wreck at a time. Davis works for a marketing firm by day. Nights and weekends, he deconstructs Mitsubishi sports cars. He tows a fresh one into his garage every month, strips it down, and sells the parts on eBay. Davis says he's not afraid for his job yet, but he doesn't want to leave anything to chance.
Right now, it is what I call hobby income. I've got a good amount of credit card debt. I've got a house mortgage I got to pay. I've got a second mortgage I got to pay. I've got a choice. I can either just stop spending, or I can find another way to create value.
Across the country, people who are trying to get ahead of the economic curve are getting help from the Kauffman Foundation. Monica Doss directs the program, a 10-week crash course in entrepreneurship.
The people that are in jobs are already thinking about this. You know, I may want to go off on my own, or, you know, next time there's a layoff, that's going to be my signal to make a move.
Kauffman kicked off its fast-track launchpad program in New York City last month. DOS expected 1,000 participants in the first year. 300 signed up in the first 2 weeks. DOS says she's seeing a new openness to entrepreneurship now, much more than during the downsizing waves of the 80s and 90s or after the dot-com bubble.
I think that Americans are a very self-reliant people, and a lot of what we're feeling is the sense that, you know, well, I couldn't mess it up any worse than you did, you know, in other words, corporate America or banking America.
But stepping off that corporate treadmill is one thing. Getting your own treadmill started in this economy is something else.
This piece is created with different shapes of Swarovski crystals. I crochet.
Lenorma Huggins hopes jewelry operation is slowly gaining traction. She's treating it like a serious startup, which means a lot of marketing and networking. Still, she's not making anywhere near enough to quit her day job.
As far as earnings, probably earn, I would say between $5,000 to $10,000, like within the last 2 months.
But she thinks she could make it on her own if sales keep growing. Monica Doss of the Kauffman Foundation says building a business in a deep recession is fraught with risk, and the chances of failure are high. She says people with a business plan and financing model in place before they launch will have the best chance of turning preemptive into a standalone entrepreneur. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Coming up, the day credit cards came a-calling in South Dakota.
And I got a phone call one day from Citibank directly. Citibank was absolutely bleeding to death. So were all the other banking centers.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials ticked up 0.1% today, 89 points, closed at 7,749. The NASDAQ nudged up 0.8%, 12 points. Finished at 15.18. The S&P 500 gained 0.9%, 7 points, ended at 8.13. Blockbuster racked up a 9% gain on news that it's going to rent and sell its movies and TV shows through TiVo boxes. TiVo rose 3% on the news. Netflix, Blockbuster's rival, fell 4%. Banks had a mixed day. Bank of America and Wells Fargo both rose roughly 6%. Citigroup lost 2%. General Motors skidded 6% today despite news that the company may have persuaded more than 6,000 UAW workers to take buyouts. Ford fell 3% today. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.78%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD. Ever wonder what it takes to make an asset toxic? Check out the Marketplace whiteboard on our website, marketplace.org. There you'll find videos unwrapping the basics of the financial crisis.
Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up on Thursday. In Washington, the House Financial Services Committee will hold a hearing on financial regulation with U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner. Kevin Rudd, the Prime Minister of Australia, speaks on the global economic crisis at the Peterson Institute. And on this day, 56 years ago, Dr. Jonas Salk announces vaccine for polio. I'm Daryl Perinata.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Stimulus money should be trickling down to the real economy any day now, helping cities and counties build bridges and repair roads. Coconino County in northern Arizona is looking forward to its share. It's pretty rural, lots of outdoor work, some of which is done by young people trained by the Coconino Rural Environment Corps. They work on hiking trails and wildfire protection, things like that. The Corps is funded by a lot of different state and federal agencies. Dustin Woodman is the program manager for the Corps. And Dustin, you're in line to get some of that stimulus money too, aren't you?
We are. We're excited about the opportunity for stimulus funding. We are monitoring opportunities from a number of sources and are anticipating some substantial growth for our program and our ability to create jobs and provide job training.
Do you have any sense of timing as to when you might actually see some of this stimulus money?
We're actually starting to pursue the first of it right now, but the definite word seems to be a couple of weeks out still.
Realistically, then, are we talking beginning of May, maybe?
We've heard as early as mid-April. It could be beginning of May. We're looking to gear up about the beginning of May and then have some additional offerings maybe in July and September.
Well, play it out for me. If you got $250,000, $250,000, what would you do with it?
It would really depend on the priorities of our partner agencies. We've been in discussions with the Grand Canyon National Park, for example, and they're anticipating some significant funding to do a number of recreational infrastructure improvement projects. This would be trail work on the highly trafficked corridor trails in the canyon, restoration of some historical sites, repair and rehabilitation of water pipelines that service the south rim of the Grand Canyon. With the Forest Service, there may be priorities placed on community wildfire protection, so that money would go to reduce fuels on some significant acreage of forest that borders the rural communities of northern Arizona.
There are probably some people who, on hearing this, would say, how is making new trails economic stimulus?
That's an excellent question. When you look at the industry of northern Arizona, we're primarily based on tourism. The Grand Canyon, for example, attracts somewhere between 5 and 6 million people annually, one of the highest visitation rates in national parks in the country. And so the infrastructure in place for visitors to gain recreational opportunities is extremely important and provides a great economic impact to the communities of northern Arizona in terms of sales tax revenues and the like.
Let me get all political on you here and imagine that we're in the next election cycle and the local representative for Coconino County comes along and says, I need to know exactly how you benefited from the stimulus money, how we, the community, benefited. Is there a way that our hypothetical representative could point to your program and the stimulus money it gets and say, well, we saved, you know, 4 jobs here and created 2 new ones there?
I do believe so, and that's our great hope with this funding, that we can expand our current workforce development programming. And we have in our minds a target of 300 as a result of recovery funding, and not only increase the amount of work we do on public lands and the number of jobs we create there, but also in these new areas of programming of energy conservation, water conservation. What our great hope is that we can provide job training that then leads to long-term career paths for young people in emerging green fields and to fill vacant positions with public land management agencies resulting from the retiring of the baby boomers.
Dustin Woodman is the program manager for the Coconino Rural Environment Corporation in Coconino County, Arizona, near Flagstaff. Dustin, we'll check back with you when you get your money, all right?
Sounds great. Thanks for the opportunity, Kai.
All right, thanks a bunch. Next time you get a credit card statement in the mail, take a minute and look at the address they want you to send your checks to. It's probably going to be the same place a lot of the credit card solicitations you get come from, beautiful downtown Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Sioux Falls is pretty much credit card central. It's also one of the reasons your interest rates are so high. In the first of a 2-part series, Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith takes us to the town that credit built.
Drive around downtown Sioux Falls and you'll see wide streets with brick sidewalks, beautiful turn-of-the-century architecture, some eclectic public art like a giant wire cowboy boot, and
the Wells Fargo building, CNA Bank of the West on my right, First National Bank on my left, and in my rearview mirror I can see First Bank and Trust. There are a lot of banks.
There never used to be, but there are a lot of banks now.
That's Bill Janklow. He's the former governor of South Dakota and the man behind the bank boom. When he took office in the 70s, the country was in a recession and inflation was around 20%, but banks could only charge around 10% interest on loans and credit cards. That's because most states had strict usury laws that capped interest rates. With inflation higher than interest rates, banks were losing money every time they made a loan. Credit was drying up.
I was trying to steer the ship of state through this incredible economic mess. And I got a phone call one day from Citibank directly. Citibank was absolutely bleeding to death. So were all the other banking centers.
Why was Citibank, which is based in New York, calling the governor of South Dakota? Because South Dakota had just passed a law that eliminated caps on interest rates, and the Supreme Court had just ruled that banks could charge interest based on where their credit card operations were headquartered, even if the bank's main operations were somewhere else. Robert Manning is the author of Credit Card Nation.
So if you moved your headquarters to another state, you could export the interest rate of that state to any customers.
Citibank relocated its credit card operations to South Dakota, where it could charge cardholders any interest rate it wanted to. Janklow still has a memento from the deal.
What we're looking at now is a piece of ribbon, and interdispersed on it are credit cards. And this is the groundbreaking on the first building for the credit card operation with Citibank, which was a heck of a deal for my state.
And a heck of a deal for banks. Wells Fargo, HSBC, Target Card, and dozens of others followed Citi to Sioux Falls and immediately jacked up the interest rates on their cards. Card applications went out by the millions, and consumers, lured by easy money, embraced the credit card culture.
If you need a card without going through credit checks, employment verification, or...
You should get one.
But I don't have a bank account, and my credit, you know...
It doesn't matter.
Plastic became the profit center for big banks, and Sioux Falls, where cows still outnumber people, became the back office for the booming credit card industry. Jim Schmidt is a local county commissioner. He says before the bank boom, white-collar jobs were almost non-existent in Sioux Falls. Now, roughly 20,000 people work in financial services. That's almost 15% of the population.
And that employment opportunity spawned other businesses. And because of that, you have incubating centers now that foster new young businesses. The healthcare industry has exploded. Our home builders are diversified.
But now that growth may be threatened. Consumers are choking on debt and can't pay their credit card bills. Credit Card Nation's Rob Manning says plastic is no longer a license to print money.
This is the greatest crisis period in the history of the American credit card industry. For the first time, banks are having trouble even selling their credit card-backed securities, and the industry's talking about default rates of now over 8%.
The industry is also bracing for credit card reform next year that will rein in interest rates and fees, and that could mean hard times ahead for the town that plastic built. In Sioux Falls, South Dakota, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Stacey spent a couple of days in Sioux Falls, so we will too. Tomorrow, what the credit crisis did to the city that credit built.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering absolute return funds with goals designed to match yours. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, a not-so-subtle reminder that Big Brother is indeed watching. The Wall Street Journal had a great item this morning about a little gizmo that used car dealers are installing on their cars before they leave the lot. You miss a couple of payments, a warning light starts flashing on your dashboard. You fall too far behind, it starts beeping at you. Eventually, it won't let you turn on the ignition at all. So at our morning meeting around here today, we got to wondering how far you could really take this. You miss payments on your new flat screen. Hey, no high-definition goodness for you. Miss a couple of payments on your mortgage. Well, you guys take it from there. I'm going to take it back, though. That is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow picked up 1.1%, 89 points, closed at 7,749. The NASDAQ bumped up 0.8%, 12 points, finished at 1,528. The S&P 500 gained 0.9%, 7 points, ended at 813. Ravi Karman, Stephen Colon, Andrea Jackson-Gewirtz, Eric Johnson, and Jeff Peters engineered the program for us. Coming up next time on the radio, a cliche everywhere except Iceland.
Just here in front of us is where capitalism fell. Yeah, we could call this street the Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.